episode 336 of the Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast. This is part one of David Eicholt. I'm breaking it into two parts because the boys are on vacation. Drake and I both taking a little getaway. And we went for 90 minutes with David, so a lot of content here. Broke it into two parts. First part here is more about David, the profession, NIL, and a bunch of other stuff. Let's have a day. Let's go. Back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, to episode, let's call it 336. I think that's what it's going to be. David and I are recording this on Monday the 18th. It's probably going to come out on Monday the 25th. Not because you're not important, David, just because spacing them out so that the good content falls every so often and people keep coming back to the show.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I know how the grind gets, and you know, it'll be right before Iowa speaks on Tuesday for media days. So,
oh, perfect.
I mean, let's use that reasoning, Tyler. Just for my own ego's sake, I think it'll make me feel at least a little bit better.
I think so too. And personally, I've been hounded by our community, our what we call the Walk-On Army. I'm actually wearing the tank right now. So, they want me to go to Tuesday media days. Like, they want to send me in as a real, like, a respected member of the media. Like, and I have played that role, you know, at the Citrus Bowl, I was rocking the media pass.
Yep.
You know, I got in, I felt special. I was in the press box. I stayed there for 7 minutes and walked back out to my seat with the regular people. I'm just not that guy. I have to leave that up to you.
Didn't I get you in a you Zoom did. Press conference with LeVar Woods too, wasn't it?
You did. And I asked a question. And everybody was just waiting for me to ask a question because they saw my name in the Zoom meeting. So that was, I was sweating so much when, like, I just felt like it was a Zoom meeting. I'm sitting in my house. I was right here.
Yeah.
But I felt like I was in a place I had infiltrated somewhere I was not supposed to be. And so I shout out to you though for that. And
I mean, it was a good way to break things up too. Cause I mean, look, Zoom meetings are great for road games, and you know, some outlets can't make it or whatnot, but like obviously face to face and getting the in-person content and the interaction. I mean, it's so much more comfortable for everybody, but, and that's no disrespect, like any of the Iowa sports information staff, so like any other staff around the country that's still doing it. Cause it's a great resource, but like, it definitely feels off when it's like, okay, it's like you're back in class, like raising your hand, just patiently waiting to be called on. It's just, it just like violates like the natural law and order of the way things should be. So it is what it is.
And no one's told me no yet. No one said, hey, stop doing what you're doing. So it's kind of the walk-on way, the washed up walk-on way is to just ride the line until we get in trouble and then just try and talk ourselves out of it.
Hey, I mean, shit. The reality is, though, too, people got recognized. I mean, you have a platform enough, too, and you offer a different perspective. So from my vantage point, even as a reporter, like, we benefit from, like, you guys talking about Iowa stuff just because you guys provide that whole new perspective for us. And it's needed, I think, for every fan base. That's why I think, you know, NIL is so good in a lot of ways, too. I mean, having Patrick and Connor running their own podcast while they're playing for their dad's team, the basketball team, I think it's a great way to get people involved. And I think the access pass for the football team, I think it's a great idea. And I think the way they're executing it right now, if people, you know, I think the most important thing, Tyler, I know we didn't mean to go down this road, but
any road people, you want to go down, bro.
People have always wanted to get to know athletes more on a personal level, but it seems like when they speak up, people are like, oh, we don't want to hear that.
You're shut up and dribble
opinion. Well, it's not exactly the way things work. And I think the athletes are recognizing that they have a voice now. And if you want to support them on the field, but you don't like them off the field, I mean, that's fine. At the end of the day, they're still representing the university. And, you know, I think ultimately the most important thing is they're good ambassadors for the program, even if they disagree, you disagree with their platform or whatever they want to use it for. And, you know, they're not getting in trouble with the law and setting a good example. I mean, at the end of the day, they are more like, they're more than an athlete. It's such a cliche thing, but I think the way some things are commercialized and the way things work, I mean, it's very easy to fall into a trap that yeah, there's an athlete. Like, no, they're clearly not just athletes.
Yeah. And it's the ecosystem works itself out too, where let's be honest, like there are some, I had many teammates who would feel very uncomfortable in the realm that I'm standing in right now. I'm in an office with a headset on in front of a microphone talking about Iowa football. It's about the least Iowa football thing you could do, right? If you're from the inside.
Yeah.
I've caught a lot of shit for this. I mean, the Iowa way is to put your head down, don't make a lot of noise, you know, work hard, their developmental program, like they're not flashy, it's KF, it's old school. I had a lot of teammates who in the first two, I mean, still to this day, they probably talk shit about me and I still don't care. Because in their mind, like out of their mouth, it's, I know for a fact they're saying, well, that makes sense. Kluver always had a loud mouth. Like that's it would make sense that he's got a podcast now, but like people who want to be more than the athlete, if they don't have that personality or they don't have the ability to create their own platform, like the market is going to tell them that by the response and eventually they will fade. Right. And so those who are going to have a platform and regardless of if you like them or not, if someone is popular and they have a following and people are listening to them, there's something to it. Right. So that speaks to them being more than just an athlete. Patrick and Connor, obviously a prime example of that. So this brought up a whole entirely different question that wasn't on my preparation list. And again, I shot the Twitter video out of me doing some squats before this. I do not prep probably as much as you guys would like me to, or you think I might for these podcasts. We really do go off the cuff. When you got guys like Drake and Kevin, I can basically just shoot them topics or ideas or questions and we can roll for an hour anytime.
Yeah. I mean, the reality is, Tyler, I mean, you've been podcasting as long as I have, almost at this point, at least consistently. I mean, shit. At the end of the day, there's always, people want structure, but what sells? And like, I know people hate Barstool and not want to go down that road, but why are they successful? Because it's like you're talking literally at a Barstool, you're cracking a few beers and you're talking. That makes the best listening content. So like when you and I don't prep, we're just like, all right, let's just go in front of this for an hour. Right. I mean, I thought about cracking a beer at the beginning of this just to be like, all right, I'm just going to relax. Like,
hey, if you want,
do my thing, you know,
if you need to walk away and grab a cold one, we're all for it here. But the question that came to my mind is, NIL is going crazy, right? A part of the NIL club is going to be some exclusive content by the players who are currently playing for the University of Iowa, which is even different than us, who are players who used to play for the University of Iowa.
Yeah.
Your job is content, right? How does that make you feel? What do you think about the influx of actual player content in the realm of that's your world? Like, does it feel like it crowds the space, or do you think, and probably would be my opinion if I had to lean one way or the other, that the more content in the space from whoever, the better, because it just grows the ecosystem. And like you said, everyone kind of helps everyone. What's your opinion on that?
I mean, look, it's a competitive industry. I mean, it really is competitive as hell. But like, for example, I mean, I won't specify a lot of outlets' names, but like Scott Dockman for The Athletic does a tremendous job covering Iowa. I think I have a lot of respect for him and how thorough he is and his analysis and his long form articles. He complements my style of writing perfectly because I'm more breaking news. I can do, you know, defining games this season. All right, here's my perspective. All right, let me podcast. And Scott goes down a different route. I think the same way can be used for player generated content. So like, you know, for example, Patrick and Connor had Spencer Petras and Alex Padilla on their podcast. Right. Mm-hmm. And I literally wrote an article based off a quote from their podcast. And it was Jennings Dunker drinking 14 protein shakes a day, which is, I mean, my God. And
yeah,
you know, arguably the most football quote I've ever heard in my life. I'd rather be big and have a kidney stone than small with no kidney stone. If that doesn't embody Iowa in a nutshell to me,
he just won the hay bale toss at Solon Beef Days.
Exactly.
So clearly he's doing something right.
Yeah, exactly. So, but to go back to your question, I think it's perfectly comparable. And I think it ultimately, for like the players who generate that content, I think it's a whole new level of appreciation for maybe like what guys like myself do. And I think it makes them more collaborative with us and more, they may maybe a little bit more transparent and comfort because now they've been in both shoes. They know how to interview. They know how to ask questions. They know, you know, to word things out. So I think there's a lot of availability with it. What I do have a problem with, and this is just my opinion, this does not reflect, you know, anybody I work for or anything like that. I absolutely hate, and I'm not throwing shade at anybody. Like, I do not want this to get out there. I'm not throwing shade at anybody specifically. I hate when certain athletes have something sponsored by a news outlet that covers the team, because then I feel like there's a little bit of an agenda. There's a little bit of a bias there. And I feel like I think that really just gets in the nitty gritty with the journalism ethics of things. Now, is that the future of the way things are going? Potentially. And could that become the new norm? Sure. I mean, I'm not opposed to that whatsoever, but as it sits right now for me, I'm not a huge fan of it. I mean, if you get exclusive interviews with somebody, you know, whatever, but I'm saying if you're using it to promote a player generated content, I think that's fine. But if there's a direct contractual obligation between a player and a news outlet, especially a local news outlet at any market, I really don't like that. I don't think it's a good look, but you know, again, people love it and it sells. So who might hate on that?
I think I'd agree with that. Are you talking about like, would an example of that be per se, if Pat and Connor were directly sponsored by the Cedar Rapids Gazette or something like that?
I mean, potentially, but I also don't know the nitty gritty of that. Now, maybe the Cedar Rapids Gazette used it to help get them off the ground. And then
that was a theoretical.
No, for sure. I don't think that's an issue at all. And again, I'm not throwing shade at the Gazette or anybody, but I'm just saying I like a lot of the guys at the Gazette, and I think they do a really good job covering the program. I think Mike Halas is a cornerstone of what Iowa athletics writing is in general for basketball, football, whatever. But that would be a good example. And maybe during the off season, I don't see it as a particular issue, but if you're having like an exclusive podcast with a host a week with a current player on the team in season, I personally just don't think that's a good look.
Yeah, that would get, yeah.
And now, off season wise, again, I think that's fine. But if you're in the season, and not that Kirk or them would allow it either, I don't think they should.
I don't think they would. I don't think Iowa would. I do think other places probably will. Sure. That would be crazy involved. I cannot imagine if like Petrus was doing like the Des Moines Register like daily show with somebody. That would be crazy.
That's what I'm saying. Like, what if I had an exclusive interview with Keegan Johnson and our group every single week during
the
season? I mean, I think that's ridiculous. I think if you can get him on for a season, I mean, like in the off season for like an hour interview or pod, I think that's fine. But like the consistency behind it, again, I think you're getting in the nitty gritty grounds of things as a reporter, and you got to be able to take yourself out of the equation. You got to understand the fan base, but you also got to be objective in what you report. I mean, you have a job to do at the end of the day. So, you know, it is what it is. But again, I'm all for player generated content. I think it's a new wave of content. I mean, it's like the Players Tribune. I think the Players Tribune's awesome.
Yeah.
And I think anything local outlets can do, whether it be Cedar Rapids Gazette, the Athletic Des Moines Register, us to help promote that player generated content, I think it's a win-win situation for everybody.
Let me pop in real quick. We're going to get back to David and I's conversation in a second, but I want to take a moment to let you guys know that this podcast is supported by DRF Sportsbook. Not just supported, but really we stand on the legs of. They are literally the stilts of our beach front house. DRF Sportsbook, the Iowa place to bet, the local. Did you know that Iowa has black as one of their colors and DRF Sportsbook also has black as one of their colors? Coincidence? I think not. DRF Sportsbook, go over to their website, ia.drf.com. Click on the promotions tab, and you're going to see several promotions. I like the first one. The new customer offer, $500 risk-free bet. Sign up with the sportsbook today. Get a $500 risk-free bet. If your first bet does not win, they'll refund you with a free bet. Minimum first bet is $10. Maximum refund of $500. Terms and conditions apply. If you don't like that one, $25 sign-up offer. Refer a friend. And there's a whole lot more that you can do on this website and with this company of DRF. If you go to their front page, it's super easy. They've got live events. They've got events starting within 2 hours. Then they have the MLB, Formula One, NFL. It's all right there. Super easy to just click and go and immediately start winning some money. Shout out to the boys and our relationship with them is going to continue to evolve, and we are happy to be partnered with DRF Sportsbook. Bet easy, bet smarter, make some green. We also want to take a moment to thank our boys at AdCraft. Basically, the Wash Up Walk-Ons is a three-pronged business, if you will. One of them is the advertising, of which we are doing some right now. The second is our merchandise and the merch sales that we do through our 24/7 store, Washed Up Walk-Ons, thewashedupwalkons.com or hawksbyamillion.com. The back end of that is all done by AdCraft's custom web stores. And if you have an idea for a t-shirt or a line of merchandise or a line of clothing, or you've got a family event or a sports league that you need jerseys for, or you've got a work situation where you need new uniforms or something along those lines, basically anything with custom merchandise, custom clothing, they're your people. It's pretty easy. We searched around. We vetted several people. We even went with a couple other people before, a couple other companies before landing on AdCraft, and they just proved to be the best. So AdCraftWebStores.com, become part of the family.
I think the take that you had that was interesting was it gives the players a new respect for the media, which is...
Yeah, it's a dicey scenario.
I think something that we figured out, probably me more than Drake and Kevin, because I do all of the work on this show, and that is a known fact. Kevin and Drake, they pop on to the Zoom call, they talk, and then... weird, the podcast comes out and it's got a description and
how'd you do it, how'd it happen?
Although Kevin and Drake have had to learn the ins and outs of interview etiquette, I guess, a little bit when we bring guests on, it's all the way down to the basic skill of public speaking, right? Talking for an hour is so much harder than people think it is. It's incredible.
You know, and I think that's the beauty of it too. And, you know, I think that's why it's so important when you get guests and when you get, you know, co-hosts, you have to have that natural chemistry. You have to be able to bounce ideas off each other. I mean, you and I have done a few podcasts together on mine, Swarmcast.
Yep.
I mean, I've been on here. Time flies by and we're like, oh shit, it's been, you know, 35 minutes already. Let's actually talk about the football team. Like,
if you're good, if you know what you're doing. If you don't know what you're doing or there's nothing to talk about, wow, 2 minutes can feel like 2 hours, man. Yep.
No,
I think that's one of the things we got really, really lucky with. People always ask me, man, I cannot count how many times people have sent me a DM or emailed me or found me in person somewhere and said, man, hey, like, how did you guys come up with like the great idea for the podcast? Like, you guys are so successful. You guys just click, like, what's the secret? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I think we just got, consistency, but like we lived with each other for 5 years. Yep. We weren't just on the same team. We lived in the same house. So our conversations, basically the podcast was happening on a daily frequency. There was just no microphones involved. Whereas other people
podcast, it really does.
And where other people, they get on and they like know somebody or the two have something in common to talk about in theory, right? But if there's no chemistry there, and I think we just got really lucky with the chemistry. So that's my answer for anyone who's asking that question.
It's and you know, like I said, consistency and repetition. I mean, at the end of the day, the longer you do it, the better you get. It's a really natural progression. I mean, it's like everything else in life. It just takes, 10,000 hours to perfect a craft or at least become a master of a craft.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is just the same. It's a science. And, you know, for me, before we really dive into Iowa football, because I don't want to deviate.
This was the plan. I wanted to go over some general stuff.
I mean, even for me, like public speaking and doing radio interviews and TV or, you know, whatever else, I'm more comfortable doing that than, you know, sometimes meeting people in the one-on-one vicinity.
100%.
And it's crazy. I know how crazy that sounds to some people, because I know some people can do one-on-one interactions all day. I'm not saying I'm socially awkward or anything like that, because I don't think I am. But when you just do this for a living and you basically are marketing yourself literally 24/7, it just becomes more of a natural thing for you to be able to public speak. And, you know, I guess when you're doing this job, it's like you have to be able to reach out to people you're uncomfortable talking with. You're not going to agree with them. It's the way it is. But it's like you said, I mean, it's just you naturally get better at it. And it's all in good fun, too. I mean, I love this shit. I love covering Iowa. I love the people I've gotten to meet. And I think just seeing the crazy change, even in 5 years from my perspective, as far as whether it be the culture, whether it be, you know, again, player generated content, former player generated content, just from the journalism side of things, it's awesome to see. And if, you know, I don't think people can say, oh, we really want to get to know the athletes more, because guess what? There's almost every avenue open now to be able to do that with how much everything's public now. It's, I mean, shit, TikTok's taking off, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's there's an LSU gymnast, like Livy, I think her name is, she's got 5.8 million TikTok followers.
Yeah.
I mean, this is insane to me.
Yep. I want to go back to, where do I want to go? All right. You knew you were going to do this, something like this, right? Like you were a journalism major
in junior in college. Yeah. I started off in business. I didn't do anything writing wise. It was by far my lowest ACT score. I had like a 34 in science, and I'm like, nah, screw that. Let's go something I got an 18 in.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you eventually make the decision like, damn, I think I could be, maybe what you're doing right now is exactly what the dream was, right? Something along those lines. Like you wanted to be a beat writer and work for a recruiting service. Is that sort of what you wanted to do?
In a way, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, obviously it's pretty well known fact I'm a Nebraska grad, but the goal was always to come back to Iowa and to start my career at Iowa, whether it be whatever outlet wanted to hire me. And I like to say I fell upwards because I worked for Rivals, Nebraska site for 3 years, graduated a semester late. I did an extra summer because I switched majors and stuff. I applied for 127 jobs, got no interviews. And I woke up to a text on my birthday from one of the VPs at 24/7 saying, hey, we have an opening at the Iowa site. Would you be interested? Can I interview you in an hour?
And I said, yeah.
I shook off a slight hangover because I went out for my birthday. Immediately got up and talked to him for 30 minutes, called me back the next day, offered me a job. I found an apartment, moved, went on family vacation, everything in 10 days, and I started.
You were riding high.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I a lot of coffee, a lot of Red Bull. I mean, I just didn't sleep for like 2 weeks, but it's all good. Enough caffeine to kill a small horse, dude.
The fitness part of me fucking is not happy with that. Oh my God. I'm the opposite. I'm almost a zero caffeine guy. No, none.
God bless your soul. I can't do that.
I run on natural energy. I work out 3+ hours a day on zero caffeine.
You love Kenny. Kenny's all natural vibes.
Love Kenny that. Smith, man. I follow everybody in the space and he seems like a great addition to the squad. Right. I mean, it's not a question. Like he's added definitely an element to the group of people who cover Iowa. Like, I don't know. It just seems like a perfect fit.
It is too. And you know, he's an SEC guy. He had to come learn to about the Big Ten. I mean, I argue he's probably my best friend in Iowa City. I love the guy. And I think, you know, I think he does a good job of displaying himself on social media and his work. But I mean, I'll say this to everybody. I mean, subscribe to multiple outlets. Kennington Smith is like by far one of the most genuine, nicest dudes I've met, because there's a lot of snakes in the media business. There really is. I mean, you know, I there's a lot of great people, but there's also a lot of people that are only looking out for themselves and looking for the breaking news. And that's the way they want to do it. That's fine. I'm not here to criticize, but if people really want to follow a good, genuine reporter who is very objective. I mean, I'll vouch for Kenny any day of the week as a person.
And I love that. I love that. Real quick, back to where I was going with that initial question of you knew you wanted to do this. Was there a transition period of you being a little less comfortable with the interviews, with the production of the actual content you now were being asked to create for your job, going to media availabilities, asking questions? Sure. Was there an adjustment period, or did that kind of stuff come natural to you?
I think there was definitely an adjustment. I think the first year for sure, when I got to Iowa, I more so listened and rather than ask questions, because I mean, I didn't know anybody when I moved to Iowa City, not a soul. I followed Iowa growing up. My late father was a diehard Iowa fan. My mom's still an Iowa fan.
Yep.
And that's just the way they are. And so I grew up, you know, I followed Iowa and I think I've done a pretty good job of taking a step back from everything. And I mean, you have to be able to cover a team.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I listen to Mark Morehouse a lot. I think Mark Morehouse is an all time great.
He's the Mount Rushmore.
Yep.
Of Iowa. Yeah.
He really took me under his wing too. And I asked him a lot of questions and he was a really good mentor to me. Scott Dockerman basically did the same thing after Mark left. So I know I got a lot of respect for those two guys. So I will say probably about the third year, I think is when I really started to get comfortable asking questions. I mean, I'll say this, Kirk, I was probably shaking the first time I asked him a question, just because like, it's so new, you know, it's so new and nicest guy.
Dude, I still shake when I ask him questions. Like,
I mean, when Fran, you know, not to get too vulgar, but when I asked Fran McCaffrey a question, I mean, Fran, when you know how to word questions of Fran, Fran actually gives great insight. He really does. He's a good quote. I about shit myself the first time I asked Fran a question. I mean, I was flat out, I was so freaking nervous. And now it's just, you know, it's a natural thing. I think once you're here for 2 or 3 years, you break enough stories, you really try hard to be in the perspective of the coach and athlete, and you word things to not attack anybody personally or criticize every move. I think, you know, as much as the coaches and players say they don't read, I mean, they keep up with it. They at least hear what's going on or what's being said. I think there eventually becomes a natural respect element to everything. And I mean, I've said this, the first time I asked Kirk a question and Kirk addressed me back or answered the question by saying my first name, that's when I felt like I really started to break through with him and with Fran. It's such a minor detail, but as a reporter, when they personalize the answer, like to Mike, to Mark, to Scott or whatever, there's just the immediate kind of like, at least to me, like a lift of a weight off the shoulders.
100%. 100%. So, I can echo that Kirk has a special way of doing that kind of stuff. We've told multiple stories. We've had multiple guests on the show who have given their stories of him addressing them by their first name, and they never even met him yet. He is an absolute monster at personability. I don't know.
Relatability.
That word. being personable with other people and just knowing things and little, like he would ask about like my extended family members and shit like that, like in the middle of a lift. And I'd be like, how do you know my family? Like, what are you doing?
I'll say this for really quick. I before I forget this. So my mom attended the Ladies Football Academy this last one. So this last time it was a big deal to her.
Right.
She wanted to raise money. So long story short, my mom got treated at Iowa Children's Hospital. She had a cleft palate as a kid. So, and then she ended up being HR, like human resources director for a decent sized company, VP of leadership, et cetera. Anyway, so that's a super important thing to her. But I remember when she went up and talked to Brian and Kirk, she ended up talking to them and they both brought up my dad's passing from August. And we're talking, I'm like, how the hell did they?
Yeah, dude, I'm telling you, I don't know how they have enough time. I don't know how they have enough time to keep up with all of that. Everything happens. It's crazy.
So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. I was working towards the question of, or the idea of respect. You said the word respect, and it's a completely understandable dynamic when a new guy comes in, especially a young guy like you, right? Who hasn't been there. Like, is this asshole as a coach, the coach or the staff member is sitting there going, is this asshole some new guy who's going to try and cut his teeth by breaking, you know, flashy stories with one-off quotes that are taken out of context? Is he going to be that kind of guy, or is he going to actually do the profession sort of do it well, represent, be a guy who earns the trust of coaches, earns the trust of players? Yeah. Is that an active thing? Was the passive listening sort of your way to ease into that persona? Like, I'm going to be one of those guys, or was there any active work done on your part to be like, man, I need to work on making these coaches and players to know me and know that I'm trustworthy and that I can, like, so that you have those relationships? Because some of the best reporters and the best stories come from guys who are like super comfortable with just one of the media members, and they're willing.
I said, like Chad's series on Jordan Bohan, I thought was phenomenal.
Yeah.
Column length stories he did. So I'll give a shout out to Chad. I would like to think my series I did with Luca Garza, for example, when he returned to Iowa, I did a 25,000 word series of 5 stories on him.
Jesus Christ.
And you know, Luca rewarded me by, you know, giving his letter to Iowa fans upon his return exclusively to me. And I published
that's perfect example.
But to go back to your question, I mean, the passive way of listening to me was a way of kind of just learning that. And I think a very undervalued tool, and what I would advise every young journalist or media member, learn how to ask questions, what you want to ask and the way you word questions. You can get the answer you want without the gotcha question. Gotcha questions are the quickest way to turn players off, to turn coaches off, to turn sources off. If you are after a direct narrative, that is exactly how you lose everything. So the way I've always tried to approach journalism is I have an old school approach with a new twist. So, I mean, the way I know the way I market myself on social media, like I can come across as a sarcastic dick every once in a while. I mean, I'm well aware of, you know what
I mean? Hey, join the brand.
I mean, that's the thing though, too. So, you know, that was kind of my way of doing that. And you know, I think once I learned how to ask questions and, you know, I almost lucked out. And this is where I feel like my career at Iowa and the way, I mean, I hate using Twitter followers as an example, but at least the way I started to get more deal, like more, you know, subscribers, more TV, radio spots, the more access to players and I, you know, and coaches. And I think it was the way I handled the 2020 racial disparity allegations. I mean, I know people hate talking about it, but still an important part of the Iowa football over the last 3-4 years. And probably the history of Iowa football, just based on the way everything sort of turned, right?
Yep.
But I mean, I had 4,000 followers when that whole thing broke. And after I called out Robert T. Green for only chasing the green and chasing the bag and not
having... What a fucking asshole, huh?
Horrible person. I doubled my Twitter followers in 48 hours.
I love it. And I'm so happy.
And, you know, my goal wasn't to do that, you know, with the way tensions were and everything. I was very nervous writing some of the stories I did. I was very nervous asking some of the questions I had. And I'm not saying anybody's way of perceiving things is wrong, because I can only give my perception and people can, you know, choose what they want to believe. But I mean, I have no regrets by the way I've handled that whole situation. I have no regrets how I handled the 2020 racial disparity allegations. And I could tell based on, you know, some of the players' interactions with me and coaches that I feel like there's more of an underlying respect for at least the work that I do.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's never about me. I mean, right. Obviously I have my brand. I want to get subscribers. It's a competitive industry, but my entire goal ever is to give more access to fans, like more access to the players and team to fans than they've ever had before, while maintaining the integrity of every person that I cover and presenting them in the right way, in the correct fashion that the way they are. Now, they may not always agree with me, but I will stand by. I've never, at least to my knowledge, I don't think I've ever projected anybody or make anybody seen in a different light than the way they actually are.
Yeah.
But again, that's only my perspective.
I think it's a good way to go about it. I think people would echo that you're doing a pretty good job. I can echo that summer of 2020, hit and record on some of these podcasts was nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
We waited, I think, 10 days once that everything broke. And, you know, the longest we go without a podcast is Thursday to Monday, like 4 days.
Yeah.
And we put out multiple times on Twitter, like, hey, we're kind of letting things all come out so that we can get a full like story on this. And when we finally recorded, and I'll never forget, cause it happened to be episode 123.
Yeah.
Our response, our episode based on everything coming out, we started that podcast and I was sweating so bad. My heart was racing so much. I'd never been more nervous. Especially because let's be honest, you look at us three and it's for anyone that has preconceived notions or already has it in their head that Doyle is this, or KF is this, or Brian is this, or the program is this. They're looking at three guys who for 123 episodes praised Doyle, praised KF,
yep,
praised the entire staff, the culture for who we are now become as adults and what it's done for us with discipline and hard work and ethic and all that stuff, a work ethic. And now we come out and give our firsthand account of what we think about what is being said. And it's like, well, we're either racist or people are going to enjoy our honesty. Like that's what it is. And it was crazy, man.
It was the timing of everything too. And I think, and you know, it was such a tough, that's what I'm saying. It was a tough ordeal for me. I mean, you know how I felt? I mean,
I've got the empathy for the writers because now, not only in your own way, us doing podcasts, you guys writing stories, it's like, holy smokes. Like I got to, every word is now a little bit more careful to just to make sure that like this isn't portrayed one way or the other on purpose. Or it was wild.
It's tough. And, you know, I think the example I can think of for me is there's two examples. One's more of a funny story. The second one is something I'd never been more nervous about. Obviously there was a lot of talk about Akron Wadley when this whole thing broke out. Mm-hmm. One of the things that helped, again, I guess, blow me up on social media was I dug through Akron Wadley's old Twitter post and some of the things that he portrayed that was abuse, he was making light of and jokes about right after it happened. For example, waking up early, pounding two shakes to go try to make weight. He claimed that he said that that was abuse, but there are tweets of him laughing about it and projecting it in a, man, I miss the football grind. And, you know, I'm like, okay, people can have their preconceived notions about it. I'm still going to put out, this is the way he felt at this time. If he feels differently now, sure, people can read between the lines. I'm not telling people what to believe one way or the other, but I think it's important we put it all out there. Mm. And the second thing, the whole Robert T. Green and the way you talk about every word mattering. So I didn't sleep for 3.5 days and that whole thing broke because it felt like every minute there was a new story coming out. There was, you know, I think we put out our site between Sean, Bach, myself, and our national team. I think we put out 40 stories in 72 hours. It was just, so on the third day, I'm like, dude, I'm getting out of my apartment. I'm losing my mind, right? I went to DC's, had a mask on. The bars were open. I'm like, I need a beer. Like, I'm just going to go relax, right? I get upstairs. I get a beer. Kinnick's vandalized.
Mm.
Literally why I'm there. So I'm typing that story from the DC balcony.
Wow.
With a Bud Light bottle where I'm just trying to unwind and relax. And I ended up doing that. And like, and then Robert Green was like, oh, you're not trying to portray my clients. First of all, I don't know what he was a client for. If he was a, you know, if he was the voice or spokesperson from, I don't know how you can be a spokesperson when you have 120 Twitter followers and like 90 Facebook followers. You're not being a voice for anybody but your third cousin and whoever else you have on Facebook and who ends up following you. The voices for the players were only going to be amplified by the reporters that chose to do their journalistic integrity and publish the allegations and to continue to update people on it.
You want to hear it crazy? Like how absolutely just off the rocker that dude is, or I'm not sure what. So all of that shit's going down. All right. We're getting in a lawsuit. Robert T. Green is the lawyer. Here are the players who are on the
law. He's not a lawyer. He's not a lawyer. Remember?
Right.
He's
you're
not a spokesperson. He's not
whatever,
a lawyer.
Whatever. So I can't, I think I got back in a back and forth with his Twitter or on his Facebook or something about how like, we misrepresented the players, or we were directly trying to like discount the stories and the experiences by the Black players on the podcast we did with James Daniels and Jordan Lomax. I'm going back and forth in a comment war, not really a war. Like I always try to be very logical and like make people feel like an asshole. And it got to the point where I was just done with it. I'm like, okay, he called me like, he's like, you're very clearly a racist, like all this stuff. And I just sent back like the okay emoji, like, okay,
oh, no.
I'm out. He screenshots that response.
Yep, I knew exactly where this was going.
And posts it on like the, one of the big pages that's like talking about and says, look at one of the former players using the white power symbol. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like deep state conspiracy. This guy is trying to, this is clearly the most nutso thing I've ever been a part of. He tried to say that me using an emoji as a response of like, okay, man, I'm out, not responding anymore. That was me like demonstrating white power. I'm like, okay.
You know, and not to get too far down it too. And, you know, I've said this repeatedly in my podcast and I addressed this. This is what I want people to hear. If you hear anything that I've said throughout this entire process, whether it be this podcast or going back, Robert T. Green does not delegitimize any of the stories that he tried to be a spokesperson for.
Yeah.
True. Take them case by case, listen to players, take them seriously, because I am in no way discounting what the players went through because I wasn't there. I'm only doing the reporting aspect of it. I'm delegitimizing everything Robert T. Green does because I think he's trying to extort them for money. He has the wrong motives and it's just, it's a bad look.
Yeah.
But we've spent too much time talking.
We'll get past that. I want to bring it back to this, something light real quick.
Yeah.
I was pre-editing the thumbnail for the YouTube video that's going to go up for our podcast.
Yep.
And bro, you don't have any pictures of you. Like, you're in the media world. You, like, I know that you know B. Ray. I know that you know Webcentric on Twitter. All the other people with these $9,000 cameras. Get yourself a picture, man.
I just changed my Twitter profile picture back to the one. And then I went back and saw our first podcast, which, by the way, fun fact, I think we aired it like a year ago to the day that this
exactly. One yep. I yeah, saw that.
That's amazing. And I'm like, shit, that's the same picture.
And I use the same one, dude.
I'll shoot you another one. How about that? I'll shoot you another one.
Like, we gotta get some professional photos of you like at Kinnick or something. That's like in action, writing in a notebook or like typing on your lap. Something.
I'll get Sean on it.
Somebody out there, or who's the other guy? Like B-Ray's assistant, or
there's a couple people.
Somebody listening, or someone who knows someone with a camera that's in the Iowa space, tell them to get some photos of Eichholt immediately. What is going on? Okay.
I don't know, man. It's okay.
We're going to get to Iowa football, I promise, but this is exactly how I wanted this podcast to go. What does a day look like for you?
Honestly, right now,
it's random because mine are random too, but like, what's a general, what could happen in a general day for you?
So typically what happens is between Sean and I, we try to have three stories up before noon every single day, whether it be rankings, updates, talking to sources, whatever. We'll try to record a podcast twice a week. We've gone more so to the breaking news podcast. I'll have content prepped. I'll make time to call some people, go through a couple corporate meetings or, whatever else like that. But I mean, dude, honestly, there is no typical day. Like, I usually don't have a set schedule. I usually wake up, 7:30, 8 o'clock, lay in bed on my phone for an hour, then get up unless something breaking happens. If I have a feeling something's going to happen, or I get told something's going to happen, I'll, prep articles just in case, something happens, just if I'm out, okay. But like, for example, dude, like this off season, I've been back in Iowa City for a weekend till this past weekend, in like 2.5 months. I've been Dallas, Vegas, Denver, Green Bay, wherever. That's just,
you've been everywhere.
Because I can work remote because there's no press conferences going on right now. I'll be in Indianapolis next week, obviously, for Big Ten media days. But dude, honestly, it's the off season so nice and working remote so nice. It's not like I have to go into an office, but there is no typical day. I mean, I'll run my message board for a while. I'll do mailbags, more so prepping stuff. And then usually what I've tried to do is I've tried to make more time and just in terms of like content planning and membership strategies and to try to continue to expand our brand, because, it's been awesome to see what I think Sean and I have built over the past 4 years. Cause 24/7 was, it was just dead in the water when I got here.
Yep.
And now I feel like we've slowly but surely started to gain a pretty decent following. And I'd like to think people respect, what we do. And, at the end of the day too, I'll say the same thing for Kenny and I, like, that we're just different than what Iowa fans have had for, I think in the internet era. And that's with all due respect to guys like Morehouse, Chad, Scott, Mike. Those guys have been around. They set the foundation for, Iowa sports coverage, but it's just a new wave. And I think getting the new perspectives and the younger generation, I always felt that it's been hard to earn the coaches' trust, but the players are almost immediately comfortable with like me and Kenny, for example, because again, well, I'm to the point now where I scouted these kids in high school. Like, I talked to them on their high school field. I've had them on my podcast. I've done different things like that. So they know me. I have a repertoire with them and with their high school coaches, et cetera. So right when they step on campus, there's an immediately like, okay, there's David. Like, I trust him. So
this is
Sorry, go ahead.
If you want to close the thought, this is a perfect segue into my next question. So, you are new age ish.
Yeah.
Online sort of, it's different, right?
Yeah.
I see you guys, you and Sean, pimping out the subscriptions. It's 50% off. It's this, it's that. This question is going to probably come across disrespectful because it's the only way that I can ask makes sense in my mind.
Do it.
Does it feel shitty to have to constantly just like, it's like all the time it's like, oh, we're running another sale. We're running another 50% off. And it's like a dollar. It's like you're in the product doesn't even cost and you're still trying to get people to like sign up when, and here's where it's going to become back around to like, I promise this is not meant to be disrespectful. Sure. The content that you guys are making is way more, it's worth way more than what you're putting out for, right?
No,
it is quality, good work by you guys. It's your job. You guys wake up, you get the stories, you get the scoops, the breaking news, the recruiting. It's worth way more than what you're selling it for. Does it ever like wear on you that you're like, God, we have to fucking give this away. And it's literally what we do for a living. Like, what can be done to make what you do more lucrative?
You know, I think that's a fair question. I don't perceive that as being dickish at all. You know, I like to think, you know, again, it comes back to this though. Iowa fans, I think for a long time had no idea what 24/7 was.
That's okay. Part of it.
So when I took this, and 24/7 is a huge recruiting service. I mean, there's massive sites that are on our network. I mean, ridiculously huge, right?
Right.
When I took this job, I knew it was going to be a grind. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, the first 2-3 years, I was working 90 hours a week. I was sleeping 4 or 5 hours a night.
Yikes.
And we were cranking out, I'm not kidding, 12 stories a day, whether it be update rankings, scouting reports, whatever. Sean traveled. We use our own personal money to go travel to scout kids and get exclusive interviews because we knew it was going to pay off. So when, you know, I appreciate you saying it's worth more than a dollar. The thing, the ultimate respect I have in the way, you know, for people or the way they can show me the most respect is I want people to sign up on a good deal, especially in nowadays economy. I mean, it's going to be tough. Okay. $1 for the first month, 30% off for first year right now, still typical. We'll do, you know, 50, 75% off a year subscription, which only equates like a little over $250 a month. I think if it's 75.
Yeah. You're giving it away. Like that's
essentially the way that people can show the ultimate respect. Our retention rate is very high. So when the special runs out, they're back, their normal pricing, and they get Paramount Plus with it too. So like we're continuing to add new things to try to make it worth more. But the retention rate is where I can breathe a sigh of relief. I'm like, these people know that we're putting in a lot of work. And I've always said this, if people don't like our content and we're giving away for free, guess what? It just might not be a fit for the style of content they're looking for. And if, you know, and that's completely fine. That's completely valid. I encourage people to go subscribe to every local outlet they can, because, you know, while I'm a competitor, like, you know, I'm not trying to take food out of anybody's mouth or anything like that. And, you know, at the end of the day is Sean and I put in a ton of time and we have nothing to be ashamed of. And if people, you know, don't want to sign up for it, no harm, no foul, but we're going to continue to market ourselves. And we know that the work that we put out and the time we put in, it's worth more than what we're putting it out for. But I'm completely comfortable with that because there's still a passion for like the job I have and the people I do it for. Like I love the Iowa fan base. It was easy for me to transition to Iowa. I'd followed Iowa growing up, like I said. So I knew the mindset of the fan base essentially. And I think Sean's done a tremendous job integrating himself at Iowa because he grew up an Indiana fan.
Absolutely.
So the answer to your question, it doesn't really wear on me. And, you know, I think the way our subscription gains have gone lately, it's awesome. And I'm super stoked to go into this next season because I think it's only going to get bigger and better.
Do you ever, I wonder this too. I'm not just worried about the players here. I'm not just worried about the content that we do at Wash the Walk-Ons. I'm thinking about David Eicholt. I'm thinking about Sean Bach. I'm thinking about Morehouse and John Miller and Doctorman. I'm thinking about all of them, okay? Because I'm trying to push this thing to the moon, right? There's no plan B. We're pushing this thing to the moon. So I'm always out here like, all right, well, they're doing content. We're doing content. How do we all get better at this content thing? When you guys are pumping out stories 12 a day, right? At the one point you were talking about, even now you're like three stories before noon.
On average, I'd say we have 7 to 8 new pieces of content up a day.
Do you ever think like, what if we did half the amount of content, but made the stories twice as long and juicy? Like, do you ever wonder, like, is it too much content where it's starting to dilute and people aren't, I guess you guys know you just said you're getting the response rate and the engagement rate that you want. You know, people are opening the stories, but are you ever like, man, maybe we're stretching ourselves a little bit too thin. What if we did 70% of the stories allowed us to throw a little bit more into each one of those stories, maybe even do slightly less work and take a little off our plate. And would that grow the content more because they were juicier stories. Like, is that ever a balance or a teeter totter in your mind?
You know, I think that's something, you know, Sean and I and even our national team continue to talk about. But like, I'll bring up this example. I mean, when we were getting scoops about players committing, you know, 2 years ago, I'm not kidding you, we would have 8 to 9 stories up the second the kid committed. And that was our way of being like, shit, you know what? Here's the interview with him. Here's what the coach said about him. Here's a scouting report. Here's how he integrates an Iowa system. Here's how he fits in with the rest of the recruits. Here's the basic commit story. We had all instant reaction podcast. We had all that ready to go right away.
Jeez.
Now we don't push everything immediately, and we've cut it down a little bit, for example. But the reason why we did that early is because we are still trying to push our own brand out. He's like, hey, look, okay, everybody else has one story. Yeah. Guess what? Shit. Here's 5,000 words from 4 or 5 different people on this new commit. And we know that's not going to cater to everybody, but it's going to cater to the recruiting lovers mm-hmm. who ultimately end up subscribing.
Yep.
Because again, while Sean and I end up doing, I think, good work to analyze game film and do all that, people come to us, the bread and butter is recruiting.
Yep.
Rankings, scoops, whatever else, right? So we've learned to manage it a little bit better. But like, for example, I mean, part of the 7 to 8 pieces of content, I mean, for Sean has done a great job on our preview series, breaking down everything. Those are minimum 2,000 words.
Yeah.
And at some point it's just like, what are we repeating? You know, and I think that's the big deal is too.
Right.
So you can have shorter stories. You talk about, you know, maybe twice the amount of juice or twice the length. The goal, the way I try to do things, for example, I hate word count. It's the dumbest thing there is.
Hey man, same. Cause those fucking pages in college were like, hey, you needed to have
me nuts.
Oh my God.
The best stories are 600 words and not one word is wasted.
Yep.
That's the best journalism.
I agree. And that's how I tried to do reports in college, and the teachers didn't fucking like it.
Oh no. God, no. It was, I mean, like, okay, you have to have 10 pages, 3 pages work site. I'm like, why?
It's so stupid, dude.
I'm like, I'm repeating the same thing for a half a page, but I'm just wording it differently.
Oh dude, I just absolute legend of bullshitting a story and just making 6 pages turn into 7 or 8. That is going to do it for the first part of the David Eicholt episode. Hope you guys enjoyed. In this first part, obviously we did not talk a whole lot of Iowa football. We will get to that in part 2. We get into the nitty gritty of position battles. What are the biggest questions? What can we look forward to? Who's on the hot seat, not just at Iowa, but in some other places around the country as well, and some actual football-specific stuff. We appreciate you guys checking out this episode. The second part will be out on Thursday, our normally scheduled programming. And if you guys want to check out our website, thewashedupwalkons.com or hawksbyamillion.com, and if you want to support the show as well as the kids in the hospital and some of the walk-ons on the team, check out our Patreon, patreon.com/washedupwalkons, where you can get an extra podcast per week, discounts off our merchandise, your subscription will help benefit the Children's Hospital, and a whole lot more. Thank you guys for listening. We'll talk to you Thursday. Peace.